got all the women in here, so we can probably move ahead.
Good afternoon. It is 3:22, and we're ready to start with our community service meeting. In attendance, we have Legislator Myers and Legislator Burton and myself. So this afternoon, we have one item for discussion, and that is the IMA for Westchester and authorizing the county to enter into municipal Westchester and Putnam County Municipal Corporations that will provide services under Article 25 and Article 41 of the New York State Mental Hygiene Law. And Dr. Mitchell, why don't you introduce yourself for the record? You don't have to sit all the way down there. We're such a huge group. Why don't you come up here closer?
Grant Mitchell, Commissioner of Community Mental Health and Acting Commissioner for Social Service. Thank you. My glasses.
How are you?
Good. How are you? So, should I?
Why don't you?
Okay.
Begin.
This item is actually this is our employee assistance program agreement, which currently we have, I think on this list is 33 municipalities. Through this agreement, we provide employee assistance services to 33 municipalities and the Westchester Medical Center. Each municipality, you know, pays on a per employee basis to the department. And this is a program that in 2009 was requiring $100,000 in tax levy support and is now not only self-sufficient, but is now we are projecting a surplus of over $50,000 in 2011. So we have, through growth of the program, you know, we essentially have taken on more, we have more contracts now, and we have held our staff constant. So essentially, that's how we've been able to kind of turn it around.
Very good. Any questions on the part of the committee, Mr. Burton?
I take it this is a renewal?
Yes.
And I don't have a list here of the participating municipalities.
I do have a list.
You do?
That I could put
Could you just possibly read down the names?
Yep, absolutely. We have Town of Cortland, Village of Elmsford, East Chester Fire District, Town of Greenberg, Town and Village of Harrison, Hastings-on-Hudson, Town and Village of Mamaroneck, Village of Mount Kisco, Montrose Fire Department, City of New Rochelle Public Library, North Salem, Town and Village of Ossining, Village of Pelham, Village of Pelham Manor, Village of Pleasantville, Village of Portchester, County of Putnam, City of Rye.
County of Putnam?
Yep, we covered the whole county. Yep. They outsourced or privatized or they divested from their mental health services years ago. So they used to do it, but they no longer do it. It's now run by a not-for-profit. So they asked us to continue that function for them.
And yep. Beyond that?
Oh, and then we have, City of Rye, Village of Rybrook, Village of Scarsdale, Lake Mohegan Fire District, Town of Rye, Cornell Cooperative Extension, Town of Southeast, Village of Tarrytown, Westchester Joint Waterworks, Westchester Medical Center, City of White Plains, and Town of Yorktown.
Well, there are some noticeable gaps there. Is there a reason why some of these municipalities haven't joined in?
Some of them actually, we offer the service and we send out letters to all the municipalities every year offering the service. Some municipalities do it themselves. Some feel they're too small, haven't really had an issue and don't see the need for it because they're very small in terms of the number of employees. And there are a few that have contracts with their for-profit EAP type services, so they're using some other vendor. But each year, so far in the last several years, we have picked up additional contracts every year over the last 3 or 4 years, including the big one, which really turned the program, which was the medical center that we had pursued for several years to try to provide that service. And that's really our largest contract.
Is that because people would prefer to seek help outside of their own employer.
Correct. Okay. That's exactly right. We're seen as independent.
Yeah.
People can either come here. We have an office available for folks to come from any municipalities at 112 East Post, or we actually can see folks. We have a couple of arrangements where we have space available in the southern part of the county and in the northern part of the county. So we make it very convenient for them. And we help out with, I mean, the goal really, of course, is to get people, whether it's drug treatment, mental health treatment, and to try to keep people on the job.
Sure.
Most municipalities feel it's been a cost savings for them mm-hmm. because of the shortened disability times. And we make sure that people who are out for legitimate reasons, have doctor's notes to support why they're out and what the reasons are. And we will monitor those individuals even after they come back for a period of time, because sometimes someone will return with conditions. They have to go to treatment once a week. Yeah. They have to be drug tested once a month. So we provide all of that, and the municipalities really appreciate that. And it's, you know, it's arm's length from management, so they like it.
I have to say that when I was town supervisor in Austin, we had two employees who almost had to be pushed into this thing, but the threat was they'd be discharged.
Right.
And they responded, one of them quite satisfactorily, one of them not so, and ultimately he left public employ. But it was, without doubt, the best possible outcome we could have. It was utterly impossible for a municipality of our size to handle this sort of thing through any other program. So
right. I'm greatly
in support of this, and at the appropriate time, I'd like to move it.
Yeah, and I will second it. I know anecdotally from both town and village of Mamaroneck and the city of Rye that this has been very, very helpful to have.
I appreciate hearing that. That's good to know.
How do you advertise? I mean, how do you let the other municipalities know that you're available?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we do send out letters, but we also send our staff to the different municipalities, and we will actually offer a program for the employees. We tend, because of limited resource, we tend to do that in some of the larger municipalities, but we will go in and do something on where, even if no one's coming to us, we'll do something on stress management, managing change on the job, financial, you know, managing finance, you know. So we'll provide a variety of in-service kind of training for the employees, whether they are officially referred to us or not. So we actually go out and do that for the municipalities. And we're seeing an increase in referrals even from our own. You know, we provide the service, of course, at no cost to county employees as well. And we, you know, have seen, some growth in that area as well, as people are stressed by all kinds of change and things in the economy and all that. So we're seeing a lot of, we're seeing more referrals from really all over.
And you're saying that the medical center is your largest
Correct.
Contract.
Yep.
How
believe
about the county of Putnam? I would think that they would be fairly sizable as well. No?
I think, you know, with county of Putnam, we're talking about the employees of the county of Putnam as opposed to the population. So the number, I mean, I think in the medical center, we're talking about roughly 3,500 or 4,000.
Yeah, they have 4,000.
Yeah. So it's pretty large.
Our county has 4,000.
And I think that Putnam has fewer. So that's the reason. And because they pay on a per member, per year basis, I think
How much is it per member per year?
I can actually tell you that. It's 20, I want to say in the $25 to $30 range per year. But I have to look up the exact number.
Wow.
Talk about a bargain.
Yeah.
And
I was sitting there with 50-odd employees. I think in those days it was about $20. And so I'm saying, a grand. How can I lose?
35. It's 35, actually.
Wow.
That
is a good deal.
Yeah, and I have the numbers. So Putnam has 650 employees. Whereas the medical center, as you said, is close to 4,000. So
six times.
Wow. Amazing.
Yep.
Now, just as the medical, I mean, are you viewed yourself as part of this?
They really are, I mean, they're part of the department, but we try really to keep as well kind of a, They have their own space. They keep their own records. Okay. And we do that because, in part, some of our own staff need access.
Staff.
Yes, absolutely. So we do, there is some... Yeah.
We've been doing...
Thank you.
School's out.
We've been joined by legislative testers.
Thank you.
So we keep, they really are separate. Their records are separate. And to make clear, even to our own staff, that they treat and handle individuals from the county and from our department the same way as the municipalities.
So we don't have the same problem that, like, the medical center would have?
No.
Necessarily?
No.
Okay.
So it works. Okay. It actually works. Yep. So, and we plan to do a number of those in-services. We're still doing some of those in-services now. Again, focused really on change, because there's just so much that people are facing these days in terms of change that we've had a number of commissioners who we've done that training for even departments, and they've told us that the feedback we get is just fantastic, that the employees really loved it. So we've got a number of those coming up.
Good.
Any questions, legislative testers?
Repeat the part, you'll like to hear this. Repeat the part about the fact that there's no tax levy and that you're actually running a surplus.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Two, three years ago when 3 years ago now, the program that we were operating was requiring about $100,000 in tax levy support to keep it going. And we're projecting over a $50,000 surplus next year because we've kept our employee FTEs the same, mm-hmm. and we've really just found a more efficient way to deliver the service, and we've brought in more contracts. So as a result of that, we're spreading, obviously, the costs. So we've now turned the program into a bit of a moneymaker.
That's great.
At least we're not asking for tax money to support it. So
the question I would have is, if you're going to be providing services outside the county, looks like Putnam County, where are those services going to be performed?
We have space that, we've actually secured some space, which is private, in the northern part of Westchester, the southern part of Westchester, and in Putnam. So they provide us access to a private area within the Putnam County office building. I've never been up there, actually.
Oh, within the Putnam County
itself? Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yes, it is within Putnam County, but I don't know exactly where the location is, right? Yep.
Because the Peekskill office there is not big enough, obviously.
Right.
So that's why I was going to ask.
Yep. So that's that. And the thing about this contract, just so you know, we were delayed on our end in terms of getting this done. We had lost our director of admin services. This contract is for 2010. I mean, this is the year underway. So we are starting the process now for 11, because when our director of admin services left, we got left hanging. So we have not been able to bill the municipalities for 2010. So we want to move, obviously.
But this
on
is a five-year contract.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay, but we want to move.
Yeah, I understand. Yes.
Any other questions or comments?
Bill, you made the motion, and I'll second it.
Under other business here,
all in favor? Need the vote.
Aye.
All opposed? Under other business, we have can you give us any idea about the consolidation taking place, or will it take place?
Well, at this point, as far as I know, there's no formal proposal for consolidation. What I have been doing, as this window has been open for me to kind of have an opportunity to look at both departments, what we are doing is looking at identifying areas where there is some overlap. And my thought about that was that we should be doing that anyway, whether there's a formal, proposal to consolidate or not. My sense is that's what we should be doing. And I've been there at DSS for about 8 weeks, and we've identified, two significant areas. There are probably others, but there are two significant areas where we are already beginning to collaborate more closely because we think we can improve outcomes and actually drive down costs. Those two areas are housing. You know, housing now is scattered throughout a number of departments.
Yeah.
But mental health does about $7 million a year in federal HUD housing, and DSS does about $3 million in HUD housing, but also does, in addition to that, the shelters and other types of housing. So we clearly see some room for efficiency that can be gained by working together, and that's what we've been doing, because both agencies, you know, both departments have lost some staff.
Right.
And so what we're doing, what we have really people doing, is kind of running up and down the stairs and doing some work here and some work there, because the processes are the same. Mm. The HUD process is the HUD process. And what we're doing is we are duplicating the process in both departments, which means we have a process in which we receive vouchers from our providers of housing. Then we have to review the vouchers. We draw down federal dollars every month to pay, and then we cut checks. And it sounds simple, but there's a number of parts to that, and we're doing the same thing in both departments. So in many ways, of course, it would be incremental to have that done, you know, with one group of staff rather than two, and that's the way it's always been separate. So that's an area where we're already sharing resources, because we have we lost a number of staff in DSS in that housing area, which was one of the particular the areas that was hit particularly hard by the voluntary separation. So we're sharing staff. So housing is one area. And the other area has to do with residential care of kids, placement of children, which is an area that's been of some concern to all of us, I think, for years now. And that is that we spend millions of dollars every year on placing children either within county or out of county, within New York State or out of state placement, when they are felt to need some kind of residential program. And it's tens of millions of dollars every year that we spend on that. And while our numbers are starting to come down in terms of placement, what we're finding is we still have kids that we believe don't necessarily need to be placed if the resources that we have in the county were, you know, known by everybody. Because what's happening is some of those decisions are made, and not everyone knows the resources. Probation is involved. There's the courts are involved. Mental health is involved. DSS is involved. And sometimes we have a resource right here that we knew about in mental health that somebody who was involved in the placement didn't know existed. And then the kid gets sent out of county. So what we're doing in that area, so one is trying to prevent placements of kids who can be safely kept here. And number two is we have our length of stay. When a kid goes out for placement, our length of stay is at the high end in the state, which means we're not doing as well as we could. So that when a kid goes out, they don't come back. For an average length of stay is about 18 months, which is significantly above the state average. So we need to be more, you know, diligent about monitoring of those kids and making sure that a plan for that child to return to the county begins the day they are placed. You have to start right away looking at a plan. So, you know, we believe that by working together, the two departments are now, what we're doing is we've formed a small group which has representation of probation, DSS, and mental health. And each placement is going to be reviewed. Each child will be reviewed before a decision is made for placement in terms of a recommendation. Ultimately, in some cases, their decisions are made by the courts. But we want to have the best. We want to provide the best possible information to the courts so they can make a good decision. And they, you know, when they get limited information, they do the best that they can with what we give them. So we're now working much more closely together on that. And while I can't give you specifics at this point, what I can tell you is that we believe we're going to be able to save potentially millions of dollars in reducing placements.
Oh, because that translates into dollars.
It's huge dollars. It's huge. Okay. I mean, just to give you an example, an out-of-state placement for a child for 1 year cost the county $180,000. One child, 1 year, out-of-state. So it doesn't take long.
Out of state or out of county?
That's out of state. Out of county, of course, the least expensive is in county. The middle sort of price around, I believe it's about $110,000 for out of county. Then it goes up to $180,000 for out of state. So every child that we can keep here safely is a win-win, because kids who get disconnected from their families and the community have a hard time coming back. When they do come back, you often get histories of criminal behavior and continued problems. So if we can keep a child locally, keep the family involved, and do it safely, we're not only going to save money, but we're going to be doing the right thing for the kids. So this is, to us, this is one of those, we think, kind of no-brainers, things that just make sense, needs to be done. There's been too little monitoring, for example, of the vendors, these out-of-state vendors. There's a lot of self-monitoring that goes on. You know, as you can imagine, when you ask a vendor of residential services, is the kid ready to come back? And you sit a DSS case manager at a table with a psychiatrist, a nurse, a director of the program, a psychologist, and three staff members. And those nine people say to our DSS case manager, kid's not ready to come back. It's a very difficult position to ask a case manager to override. They just don't have the expertise. So inevitably, you know, the stamp goes on, 6 more months. We just feel that we can do a better job monitoring, reducing lengths of stay, and reducing the number of kids placed. So this is an area that we're really focusing on, because we see it as just an obvious way for us to do the right thing and spend less. So just, I wanted to give you those two areas as examples of where we think there's going to be room for savings that actually benefits the public.
So. Isn't that interesting?
The age range, these are usually teens, right?
Yes, most of them are teens.
On pins.
That's
position.
Right. Some of them are pins, and some are not. That's right. So we met with Judge Davidson, who handles a lot of these cases. We talked to her. She's really behind the proposal and going to be part of it. She agrees with it. You know, but she had said, you know, I have limited access. I can only, you know, I only get the information that I get. If you can provide better information,
sure,
and you can provide me with alternatives that are local, I'd be happy to do it. I just didn't know they were out there.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, DSS already has contracts, for example, with local providers,
mm-hmm,
that have vacancies for kids who could be placed locally, which is cheaper and better. And yet, there's like a disconnect of communication, so the folks making the decision don't know that there's a vacancy there because they're in the mental health side and they're not on the... So we're just bringing all that together.
Communication.
Really,
right, and we're going to track it. We have a proposal, a draft of a proposal in which we have a process that's going to start, and we're going to be able to track. We'll be tracking the lengths of stay. We'll be tracking the number of kids that go into placement month by month. So we'll actually be able to come back, you know, I'll be able to come back at some point and report on the success of the program, both in terms of length of stay, costs, and numbers of kids placed. So we're actually going to, you know, we'll monitor our results. But it seems easy to us that we're going to save some. It's a matter of how big that savings will be.
Thank you. The tracking of this sounds as though it's building on the intensive case management program that you undertook at the urging of this board and with your intellectual guidance.
Kind of Yeah, keep going.
You know, this is my Catholic, and I got on this bandwagon a couple of years ago, thanks to legislator.
The care coordination.
Yeah, the court care coordination.
That's what it was.
And that was that was an absolutely extraordinary thing. But it was at the time only something that community mental health was doing.
Right.
Now that you have oversight on both of these departments, is it likely that you will be able to bring that approach to people with chronic situations that are under the jurisdiction of DSS, not just CMH, but
yes,
DSS as well?
Well, that's a good question, and I think the answer is yes, because the approach makes sense. I mean, it's just logical, and I think it's a result of what has been, I think, just a disconnect. That's why, you know, this whole issue of that comes up periodically about consolidation. My sense is whatever is decided is fine. But ultimately what's needed, regardless of the formal structure, what's needed is someone has to look and say, we have to stop the fiefdoms and the hunkering down and doing our budgets into, because that just doesn't work. And if no one looks at the bigger picture and says, this is not your money, my money, it's, you know, it's the, this is the group we serve, there's a lot of overlap. Somebody has to look at that. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be done formally or legally, but it has to be done, you know, regardless of how you structure it. And I don't know that it takes necessarily that formal process to do it, because we're doing it now and it's sort of informal.
You know there we're doing was it. Something done. I don't know if they left behind. The legislators never got involved in it, although I was sent to the first meeting just as a representative, but never invited back again. There was a thing in the Spano administration, it was about 3 or 4 years ago, where they brought a consultant in, and he had this whole big, and I sat through his initial presentation, and they had all the commissioners and the directors of all the departments there, and he went through a whole big thing about tearing down silos, mm-hmm. and the whole idea was, because I asked him if it was possible to do it with Board of Legislators, and he said he did generally not, he didn't do that kind of work with elected officials.
Right.
But in departments and commissions, the whole idea of Absolutely. Looking at everything holistically. Yep. So I don't know if it's upstate, who knows if that went into the shredder, but there seemed to have been a lot of work that was done in that area.
It really makes sense. I mean, having just done this for 8 weeks and done the care coordination program for a couple of years, it just makes sense. We all know we've got a subset of the population that use the disproportionate share of county resources and services. That's the group that we have to focus on. And that group, again, I still believe we can provide better service and spend less. I mean, that's what we have to do. That's how,
Well, so, as a preliminary to the grilling on this subject, which you're going to get at the budget session, I'm presuming that you're going to be able to bring us some quantitative results, because we had been put off by the administration last year on the idea of putting another 100 individuals and the funding therefore into your program. And you yourself had testified that you just did not believe that you were ready to make that leap. But I'm going to make the presumption that we're going to be dissatisfied if that's what we hear again. And it would be great to know that you were able to port at least some of this in the short time you will have to be at DSS into this model, yep. into operation DSS.
Well, your timing is amazing, because if you ask Mike Kaplowitz, we sent up, George Oros forwarded my updated care coordination results this morning.
Oh, wow.
So you have those results now, because in anticipation... what we did was we updated all the savings charts and everything. So the latest data, it's in Mike's mailbox today.
Terrific. Okay.
Email box today.
Well, we'll be hearing about that in the near future.
Fine. I appreciate that.
I'd very much like to see
this. We're ready for that.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, the placement of children in county versus out of county versus out of state. I'm not in any way familiar with the universe of facilities for this kind of placement, but is the reason we have gone so far away from Westchester County, either to Rockland or I believe there's a place up in Albany, but mm-hmm. we've also gone way out of state. I seem to recall last time around there was something about Ohio.
Yeah, all of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania's a big one.
Do we have the facilities here that are just oversubscribed within the county, or is it that nobody has really kept track of what is available within county that's caused us to go out of county?
Well, what's happened is that the situation's changed is what's happened. If you went back 3, 4, 5 years ago, if you asked in-county providers, they would tell you they're pretty much full. That was one problem. And two was that they didn't feel they were equipped to manage certain kids who had sex offending behavior and certain fire setting behavior. There were in-county folks would say, we're just not set up for that. It takes a different type of facility to manage that. So those were the reasons several years ago. The situation has now changed dramatically, because a lot of our facilities in the county are filled with New York City kids.
Yeah,
they're not Westchester kids.
Yeah.
They're city kids who are placed there by the city.
Right.
What's happened is the city like every city, is trying to reduce placements. They have pulled a lot of kids out of care, the way we're trying to do now. So those same facilities are now sort of coming around and saying, by the way, we've got some openings. If you've got some kids, we've got some openings. And we're even willing to take some more challenging kids that we couldn't take before. So what we need to do is they need to develop those sorts of programs right here so we can stop doing that. Because in many ways, we're also sending the dollars out of county.
Right, but these were they sending, was New York City sending us bigger dollars than...
Well, it wasn't coming to us. I mean, the problem is these are like not-for-profit. They had their own contracts.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't really coming into
us.
Right.
Yeah.
But when we send the dollars to Pennsylvania, obviously, instead of sending them to a provider that has their roots in Westchester, I mean, for many reasons, it's better that those dollars and that child stays here. So I think what's happened is it's supply and demand partly. They now have openings. They're now coming around in the last few months and saying, hey, you know, would you work with us? You know, would you talk to us? We're willing to accommodate some of the kids that we said no to 2 years ago.
And broadly speaking, are we getting parental and court support for this move?
Absolutely.
Okay. So then the question is, supply and demand is supply and demand. It will come back. The push can go away as well. And the feeling is, well, we're not going to take these really tough cases now. You're going to have to send them somewhere else. How do we, can we ensure in any way that, what's the big one in Yonkers? The one we went to that time.
Yeah. The big
one. Lincoln Watts.
Right. To cite as an example, which I know nothing about what they do or anything, I don't mean to be negative about them, but that a Lincoln Watts, which I do know takes a lot of city kids, can be induced to say, I have no idea about their turnover or anything else, but when they get a vacancy, to call you and say, hey, look, we've got a space. You got anybody who will fit? Rather than just pick off the 11-kid list from the city.
Right.
Well,
can
does
we manage
Watts
this or not?
Get more money from New York City?
I don't know.
Than they
what
would
their,
from Western?
Yeah, I don't know what their contracts. It's a good question. I don't know what their contracts look like. Mm-hmm. What I do know is they're coming to us now because they simply don't have enough kids to keep. Not all facilities, but a bunch of providers who are quality providers are now coming to us saying, we want your business. So the timing may be right, and I don't see it anytime in the near future swinging back the other way. There is this pressure and a recognition that kids should not be placed unless there is literally no other option. So I don't see there being, you know, in 6 months from now, a big swing toward the other way. With one exception, and that is that, you know, what everybody fears is a bad outcome, that a kid is kept home or kept locally, and then there's a bad outcome. And sometimes when something happens like that, you know, the pendulum can swing pretty quickly. People say, forget it, send them out. But then, you know, all of this is risk-benefit and, you know, looking at, you know, do we send 200 kids away because we don't want no risk. I mean, you just can't operate that way.
Or no ascribed risk, because if there's a risk and it occurs, whether it's in Ohio and Pennsylvania or White Plains, it's still a risk and it's still a Westchester kid.
That's
and
right.
it is
right.
Sort of on our head.
That's true. That's
so
true. And some of these facilities,
I don't know
the
keep
problem is,
that way.
The problem is some of the facilities are basically warehousing kids. They're not doing treatment. They're basically, it's like a place to stay. And that kid has no chance of reintegrating locally if they're not getting any sort of services. And some of them are very weak, the out-of-state. They're very weak on services.
Well, you said that you were talking about quality placements. And
we have those providers here in this county who are saying we're ready.
And your sense is that you have the ability to get a kid who needs it into a quality location.
Correct.
In most cases,
there are some exceptions.
There are still some that you're going to have to send away.
There are some we're going to have to send away, but I guess I want those numbers to go down steadily. And I want, when a kid does go away, I want them back as soon as it's safe to do so, which means we have to monitor the program. We can't have the vendor monitoring themselves. The other piece, so just a simple example, is the out-of-state vendors. We set the rates. We negotiate rates. So I ask, you know, because I come in, you know, I know nothing really about that piece, and I say, so how are the rates determined? And I'm told, well, we negotiate them. And I say, well, when did we last negotiate the rates? Nobody can remember. So the other piece is we have to go up and say, hey, it's supply and demand. Things are changing. Fewer placements. we got to negotiate better rates. Now, we can't negotiate. The state sets the rates within the state, but these out-of-state placements, we get input into the rate setting, and we should do that. So there's a bunch of ways that this has to be attacked, and there's not one solution. We have to hit it from four different directions.
Is the focus? I've been logging these things here, Madam Chair. Is the primary focus, and I suppose this is a leading and obvious question, but is the primary focus on the quality of the outcome, or is its primary focus on the budget?
The primary focus has been on, I think, on safety. I mean, the concern, a kid goes out when there's a feeling that they can't be safely maintained in the home. The decision about whether they go to a county facility or an out-of-county or an out-of-state depends really on what the needs of that kid are and what the recommendations of this evaluation team. Correct. Yeah. They get a workup and the recommendation is made, and then oftentimes if it's a PINS, the judge is deciding where the kid goes. But what we're hearing is that they're not always aware of the resources that are here. So they make the best decision based on what they have. The other thing is that the law requires that three applications be made to county facilities and have three rejections before you can go out of county. The idea is force people to try county. The problem is that, you know, when people want and believe a kid needs to go out, you know, you send a kid who's a sex offender, fire setter, to a place that has no capability.
Well, you'll get the rejections.
You're going to get the rejections, and then the kid goes out. Right. And, you know, I'm not saying that anybody is intentionally doing that, but I'm saying that we need to if the agencies don't have that capability, they're saying they're willing to develop it at no cost to the county because they need their facilities have vacancies. So we just need to they're not going to do it until we say we'll start sending you some kids. Mm-hmm. So we're in a bit of a stuck. So that's where we are.
Okay, the last one, which I think is works into the regime of my committee, which is the housing issue. You say that DSS has about $7 million in
$3 million in HUD, and DCMH mental health has $7 million.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I had reversed them. That's an awful lot of money. As you say, that both departments are processing the same kind of paper, but are they're placing different kinds of people?
Some are the same and some are different. It depends. There's a lot of overlap, I can tell you. And the process is almost identical.
Okay, so you could do an exceptional processing for those that don't match together.
Right.
Now we have the third major player, which is the planning department.
Right.
Oh, yeah. The suggestion had been from this board last year, and it was roundly booed by the administration and dropped, that the housing be brought into planning. And then there was a rollover sometime in the winter of let's take everything and put it in DSS. And now, with the decimation of DSS's capacity, the finger seems to have moved back to planning. This strikes me as nobody's fault. It's just simply we just don't have enough coordination, and it has probably dropped fairly far down the pile. Is there a therapeutic question in mental health or DSS that would prevent moving that housing into planning, where it's basically going to be a bureaucratic process, I would guess? Or is it such that it really has to stay within the social service mental health area?
It does not have to stay. I mean, I don't know what planning is planning.
Mm-hmm. Or anybody else.
I don't really know what they're planning, but what I can say is that we, DCMH, took on this housing thing at the request of administration in 1998, I think it was. There's no reason why it needs to sit with us. It's housing. Whoever goes into housing, it's homeless people. Whatever their background and history is not the issue behind housing. So the reality is we're doing it, but there's no particular reason.
It's placement, then treatment.
It's housing, you know, and we assist, but we could do the connection to services piece, no matter where the housing sits.
And no matter who puts
that's
them
right.
in the house.
It's not relevant.
Is the same thing true in DSS?
It's the same exact
such
process.
You've seen.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no reason. It could sit anywhere, basically.
Okay. Yeah. That's very encouraging to, and frankly, your candor is extremely encouraging, because there are a number of us who don't know which way to go, but who were unsure that there weren't special needs in each of the departments that required that the housing be dispersed into these departments. If it appears, and I'm not going to hold you to this or anything else, but if it appears that this function can travel as a single pod anywhere, then that helps an awful lot in trying to figure out whether we have the ability to develop a broader housing policy that has nothing to do with the stipulation, mind you, but a broader policy of operationally placing and developing units out of one place, which I think, I guess most of us would say one agency doing it is better than three agencies doing it, because you simply need fewer personnel. So I'm really encouraged that. I'm going to put that away, and you may hear from us in the Housing Planning and Operations Committee sometime in the next couple of months. Thank you, Madam Chair.
There's a judge in Rye, a retired judge, who told me that it used to be, there was a tie-in also with eviction. And the minute somebody received an eviction notice, it was required that DSS be notified.
Under county law or under DSS requirements?
And that was part of the way remembered it operating, because the feeling was an eviction.
A former DSS person here.
Right. We do.
Yeah. Oh, there you are.
Mary Jackson.
Eviction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so that's still in play then, or not anymore?
Oh, she's no longer.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, he thinks that he thought
well, we're
it was
gonna,
not
we're
in
then
place
look
anymore. But
more
there was
about this.
A whole.
If we try a legislative approach in coordination with the administration about where these things go, and I'm not sure that we're going to do it in a budgetary way this year. I don't think that's a practical thing to be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a restructuring of the direction of certain kinds of housing policies in this county. I think this is a very important matter to pursue, and I really thank
I
you
agree.
for bringing that forward, because we do, as soon as this starts tying into evictions and effectively homelessness, but not
right.
necessarily because we put a lot of money in prevention as well, then this is beginning
that's
to get bigger
issue.
And bigger and bigger. So that's terrific. Again, thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Before we go on, I know Ms. Myers has some questions. I just have. Maybe I missed this. When you spoke about the cost of residential placement for the kids, you said 180,000 out of state, 120.
Those are averages.
Out of
yeah,
county.
Right.
What is it in county?
I don't have that number with me. I'm not sure. But it's roughly half. It's roughly half of out of state. So it's 70, 80, 90,000, somewhere in that range. But it depends on the facility and the intensity of service.
It's interesting. I spent many years in a former life working for a nonprofit child care agency, and we did almost all of our PINS placement out of the New York City based agency, out of New York City. Mm-hmm. The only youngsters that we placed, for the most part, in New York City were severely mentally handicapped. Youngsters and a few. We were in group homes, and we had a few placements. We had 80 youngsters in something like 8 different group home situations. But it's difficult in New York City because most of it is apartment house dwelling.
Right.
And even in our case, we had double apartments that we rented, and you know, there were like 5 bedrooms for each double apartment, so you'd have 10 kids per. But the staffing was a problem, the youngsters were a problem, and they usually much preferred to place in Westchester County.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's been been the long-standing history.
Yeah.
And now the city equivalent has been, DSS equivalent, has been pulling kids back OCFS, they're pulling kids out. Any kid that they believe doesn't need to be there is being pulled out.
Yeah, it was also felt that the change of environment in Westchester was much less predatory than the New York City environment.
And so here we go sending people to Pennsylvania.
Right.
Westchester is not good enough.
Right. I'm sorry. Okay,
Pennsylvania sends to Nebraska.
Right. Right. Soon they'll be in Europe.
Oh, gosh. I wanted to just turn it, if we could, just back to slightly younger children, back to the whole child care area. And I wondered if you had yet gotten involved at all with the whole Title 20 and what had been, I thought, a terrific program with the scholarship program, and whether there's any way. And we're hearing so much anecdotally about what's happening with childcare in the county now. If there's any way we can start to, or any new information that you might bring to the party about what do we do about the fact that it's so expensive in Westchester County and that we have so many families that are literally, I mean, our scholarship program was providing people with $1,000, and that was making the difference between being able to have their kids in a good facility versus not. They could come up with the $11,000 or $12,000 on their own, but they just needed that, and that's where we were able to really make a difference, I felt. And I'd love to see us be able to get back into that area at some point.
I mean, the only thing what I've asked the staff to do at this point is really what they've been done is sort of bring me up to speed on how the programs work, what the issues have been, what the various options and possibilities, because we're looking at everything as we try to kind of put together a plan for next year. So,
Take a look at all at the, there was a really good study that was done by a group out of Kansas, the ETC study, and it should be in your in the DSS files.
I don't know.
Did ETC stand for? I'm sorry. Anyway,
I did look at a study, but I don't know if that's what
really,
it was.
It's a really, really good study that showed all sorts of needs for improvements in childcare facilities in terms of business plans.
Yeah.
But also the need for helping and some form of subsidy. It was a very interesting study and had the sample size was very large. It was done in 07.
And Kathy Hallis would probably be able to provide
Kathy has
copies
it. She has it online, yeah, actually.
We met once so far because, okay, you know, she wanted to also kind of bring me up to speed on her view of things,
yeah,
and we wanted to start to have some dialogue about that. At this point, my sense is that, you know, been working a lot with Catherine Walushka. So she's been bringing me up to speed. And so, you know, we're really looking at, you know, what are we going to do? What kinds of things could we do? What changes, if any? So, we haven't made any sort of decisions, but I've certainly spent, you know, knowing this is a very important issue to everybody, we've certainly spent part of my time looking at all that. So I have a better understanding of the system, what we have, what we had, where we, you know, might need to go. I'm definitely not. I mean, Catherine is just an incredible resource.
She's a great resource.
And Kathy as well. The hour and a half I spent with her, she was great.
Yeah. And actually, John Beefus used to, before he took over, I guess, the financial stuff.
Right. He knows both sides of it.
So he knows both sides.
He does. He knows the program and the fiscal.
Yeah.
So we've all been talking about that, and so, you know, that we're sort of doing some thinking, and but definitely no decisions yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know exactly what we're going to do. But I feel like I've certainly had a crash course in a lot of this stuff in the last 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's, you know, we recognize it's an important area.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions?
If I could redirect, Madam Chair. The top three layers of the administration of DSS were essentially wiped out by the retirements and the voluntary separation. You can't run a department your size without having those people around. That we had talked with the staff and with the HR department about what the opportunity of all these vacancies at one time was for either slimming down or outright abolishing. But at the same time, you have to have a structure. How is that coming in terms of making those decisions and in finding individuals, either from within the system or outside?
That's okay. That was, you know, sorry to interrupt.
No.
But one of the things
That's one of the things you meant to ask?
Well, actually, I was going to have Grant come back and do a, if I may call you Grant.
Sure, of course.
Come back and do, I think I had sent word out that we would like to have a breakdown, a hierarchical breakdown of the new organization and how it was going to, you know, who was going to be responsible for what, someone. And I got word back that it was too much too soon. And I had been thinking about it the last few days in terms of, since the budget is due out imminently, I figured that when you came to do that, that would be an appropriate time to discuss some of that.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you.
Unless you want to give us a preview.
No great words of wisdom yet. But we're working on it. I mean, you know, I understand what you're saying. You're right. And what we are doing is we're identifying there's some real talent within DSS, and what it takes time to do is to find those people and develop and find out what their interests are and where their experience lies. And you know, I think DSS is sometimes, you know, maligned in a way that I now, even just with 8 weeks, you get a sense is not fair. It's a very complicated, as you know, highly regulated area where I was talking about it before. You know, I'm getting 3-4 regulatory changes a week from a variety of agencies that are, it's incredible just keeping up with the constant, almost barrage of changes. But I'm also finding that there are some really great people who really love what they do, who care about the people we serve, who want to do the right thing. And, you know, I've always, you know, philosophically believed that if, you know, we should try when we can to identify that talent within the organization and promote people from within if we got that talent. And that's what we're doing. You know, we're really trying to, I've been meeting with folks to try to find out what they've been doing, what they want to do, where their skills are, their talent. It's just such a large organization that, you know, I've really only sort of done a bit of that for now. But already some people have come forward and said, I'm ready to take on more, I want to do more, you know, I'm here to help. And others have voluntarily filled in where we've had some gaps, have said, you know, I'll cover this for you for now. I've got some experience from the past in housing or this, that. So it's been okay. It's been okay, and I think we'll see some changes in our personnel in the near future as we identify those folks who wanna take on additional responsibilities, have the training, meet the requirement, the job specs, and we'll put those, you know, get those people. And it's building a team.
Yes.
And I feel like I've got that team in place at Mental Health, which has enabled me in many ways to do this, because I've got a great team, I trust them, and so I've been able to pull some time out of there to be able to do this. Building that team took, you know, 3 years to do, but now I've got great people, and and that's what I want to do at DSS, you know, while I'm there as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, thanks for having me, as always.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have minutes. From two sets of minutes for the same day. I think one was in combination with committing legislation.
It was GCED.
GCED.
Okay. Yeah, I missed the morning meeting on the 24th.
I'll move both sets of minutes, right? Okay.
I can second the afternoon meeting.
Okay.
But I can't.
I can second the afternoon.
Unless
you want to do it.
Sure, I can do it
in the morning.
Okay. All right, so that's it. Receive and file. We have, that's kind of redundant now.
So we should receive and file it.
Receive redundant and file.
Receive, mark redundant and file.
I have a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Okay, any other business to that we need to deal with here?
Nope.
He's amazing.
I think this is an extraordinary meeting.
He's an amazing
really
man.
Think,
we are so
it's great to get him down here.
Yes.
So, always so informative, because he appears not to have the bureaucratic fear of if he says something that either gets out ahead of the ninth floor or reveals some sort of weakness that he'd be in trouble. And yet he clearly has the trust of the administration.
Yes.
So. This is a great combination.
Yeah, I think it's very good. So we adjourn the meeting now?
So moved.
Second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Time.